WVW Broadcast Network is pleased to present National Security Meltdown with host Philip Haney. As the author of See Something, Say Nothing, Philip is recognized as a credible national security expert and frequent guest host on national radio and television broadcasts, as well as a much sought-after keynote speaker. Philip is a charter member of the Department of Homeland Security with previous experience in the Middle East. As a DHS frontline officer and intelligence expert, Philip bravely tried to say something about the people and organizations that threatened the United States. Yet, his intelligence information was eliminated from the government database, and he was investigated during the Obama administration by the very agency assigned to protect the country. Through this broadcast, Philip will expose just how deeply the submission, denial, and deception run within our national intelligence agencies. Philip's years of being an insider allowed him to be an eyewitness to the federal government's capitulating to an enemy within and punishing those who reject the narrative of the deep state. Such dereliction of duty has led to a national security meltdown. And now, here is your host, Philip Haney.
Welcome back. Our continued series on national security meltdown. Our subject today is national sovereignty. We've been hearing a lot about this in the news, although the word sovereignty is not always actually applied. In fact, President Trump standing up for our sovereignty has been accused of being a nationalist, which somehow equates him with being somebody like a Nazi. But it's not a dirty word. Sovereignty is a very fundamental, even biblical principle. Nations are defined by borders. The very first border that I can think of in the Bible is the Garden of Eden. The Promised Land was defined by very precise borders. How did you know when you were in Israel and when you weren't? By defined borders. And for those who say no walls, no borders, then they also support sanctuary cities, don't they? So how does a person who supports a sanctuary city even know when they're in a sanctuary city? They're called a city limit. So sovereignty and borders are interconnected, and we're going to talk about that today as part of our evidence of a national security breakdown or meltdown. So the first question I have is Latin rex lex or lex rex. That means, is the king law or is the law king? Well, in our society, in our constitutional republic, we believe that the law is king. And we fought a revolution over whether or not King George was the law or whether the law would be the standard of rule. And taxation without representation is basically a way of answering that question. We believe that lex, the law, is rex. But you can see people in this picture. In this case, they're talking about open borders and sanctuary cities. Let them in, disobey. I'm not really quite sure what they mean by disobey what. Disobey the Constitution and honk for what's right and so on. This is a protest. So the argument in our country today is really whether America is going to remain as a constitutional republic or morph into a democracy. And every time you hear somebody like Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer say that our democracy is in danger, that's actually an incoherent statement, because America is not a democracy. We vote, yes, but it's a constitutional republic. And so many of our elected officials seem to have either forgotten that or never learned it in the first place. The big controversy that's emerging now over the Electoral College is part of the effort to push us into a democratic form of government rather than as a constitutional republic. Hillary Clinton continues to say that she won the popular vote, but she lost the Electoral College. And you can see the genius of our founding fathers, because they didn't found America to be a straight-out majority democracy. They founded it as a constitutional republic with equal representation for every state. And without the Electoral College, basically our presidents would be elected by large states like Texas, California, and New York every single time. So whoever controlled the majority in the political arena in those major states would win the presidency, and other elected offices with virtually no competition or opposition at all. So what are we fighting against? You know, as I've traveled around the last almost 3 years now since I retired from DHS on the 31st of July, 2015, I often hear from people what we're fighting against. Some are talking about school issues, some other social issue, political. Everybody has a cause or a concern. And so, but what are we actually fighting against? And I think it's good to go back and use the language of the founding documents. In this case, the Declaration of Independence. If we want to understand what we're fighting against, it's remarkably ironic that there's a definition of what we're fighting against embedded within the Declaration of Independence. And it's this line here, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and to institute a new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. So what the global Islamic movement is doing with their definition of sovereignty as Sharia, and or what I call the Apples, the Antifa progressive leftist socialists, with their own definition of sovereignty, which is based on diversity, inclusion, fairness, and equality, is to alter or abolish the current form of government we have and replace it with one that's more suitable to their worldview. And that's why you find so often that they're allies together, the so-called Red-Green Alliance, because they both are seeking to alter or abolish the current form of government. They call it a racist, xenophobic document that's not up with the times. It needs to be a living document. And if the Constitution is in the way of a political agenda, well, you just run right over it. You don't even pay attention to it. So, but I would like to also ask, what are we fighting for? Because if you understand what you're fighting for, you're going to be a lot more effective in whatever arena that you operate in. And my premise is that we're fighting for our sovereignty, the right of any nation, any people, to choose a form of government that they would live under. Well, America is founded as a constitutional republic. Our sovereignty is defined by the Constitution, not subjective terms like diversity, inclusion, fairness, and equality, and certainly not like another code of law like Sharia. It's defined by the Constitution. If we move away from the Constitution as our definition of sovereignty, we will no longer be what we know of as America. It will become another kind of government, and it'll be a different kind of country. So conservatives and patriots, whether they really consciously grasp it or not, are standing up for sovereignty as it's defined by the Constitution. And maybe that seems a little bit like stating the obvious, but I can tell you from traveling around for these last nearly 3 years that it's not as obvious as you might think. And that people can often tell you what they're fighting against, but there's not so easy for them to verbalize what they're fighting for. And so for that reason, I began talking about sovereignty to try to introduce this concept into the vocabulary. And I must say that I have noticed a lot more discussion about the concept of sovereignty in the last 2 or 3 years than I did before, much more. So what are the weapons of our warfare? What are the weapons, of the strong weapons of this fight that we're in to protect our sovereignty? Well, I've got four examples: Article 1, Article 4, Article 6, and the 14th Amendment that we'll just run through real quick. Again, we're talking about sovereignty. And this is what a lot of our fellow countrymen, our poor, pitiful countrymen, this is a state they're in now, like infants, like spoiled children. They don't want to follow the Constitution. They believe in their wisdom that their concepts and their definitions are superior to the Constitution, and that they're going to implement them. And the amazing thing is that they use the checks and balances form of government, the constitutionally mandated form of government, to implement their political policy. And the way they've been doing it since at least 1973 is the abuse of the judiciary, to go court shopping and get a particular judge to sign on to their political cause and push it through into the culture by the judges, rather than going through the constitutional process. And they're so accustomed to doing this, to getting their way through the judiciary, that they really are like children having a temper tantrum. And you saw it with the Kavanaugh hearings. The thought that they might actually be challenged in court, through Supreme Court, on the rights of abortion, sent them into spasms of hysteria. And they tried everything that they could to prevent Judge Kavanaugh from being confirmed as on a seat of the Supreme Court. Fortunately, they were not successful, but you certainly saw a lot of effort to disrupt the hearings. People were standing up and screaming one after another, including Linda Sarsour, who I've mentioned before. She stood up and disrupted the hearings. And it wasn't based on his qualifications, and it really wasn't based on his supposed behavior back in high school days. It was the fact that they knew full well that he might actually consider whether or not abortion is constitutional or not. The mere threat of that sent them into spasms of hysteria, like this child here. So Article 1 simply says that the federal government has to establish a uniform rule of naturalization. Well, isn't this a big debate today? Do we have a uniform rule of naturalization? Actually, we do. But are we enforcing it? No. We're not enforcing it, and we're not being supported by members of Congress to enforce it either. They essentially believe in open borders. Well, that's a flat-out violation of the Article 1 of the Constitution. So if people are elected to political office who don't even stand up for the Constitution, they really shouldn't be there. Maybe they're really good salesmen or some other profession. That's what they should be doing. If you run for public office, you take a vow to uphold the Constitution. And they should. They should not base political policy on their own subjective definitions of what's right and true and fair, political correctness and so on. They should base it on the Constitution. If we did that, we'd see a lot of the argument diminish. It would die down quite a bit, and people would really actually be focused on what they're there for, what they were elected to do, rather than this endless debate that we've been seeing lately about whether there's even a crisis at the southern border, for example, or whether we should allow people from non-functioning countries come in who might commit terrorist acts, and so on. So we also, the federal government's provide for the calling forth of the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. That's why they debate so much about whether the southern border is being invaded. They don't want to use the terms that are actually in the Constitution, because to use them and define it that way forces them to recognize and submit to the statutes of the Constitution rather than their own political agenda. So they do everything they can to avoid referring to the Constitution. Article 4 says that the U.S. guarantees every state a republican form of government, not a democracy, notice, and shall protect each one of them against invasion and, interestingly enough, outbreaks of domestic violence. Have we seen outbreaks of domestic violence lately? Yes, we have, around the country. Just look on the media or on the web and you will find examples of disruptions and outbreaks of domestic violence. That's the federal government's primary responsibility. So anytime Congress opposes President Trump for attempting to maintain stability in our country or at the state level, they're in violation of the Constitution. Just because it's members of their own preferred group, like Antifa or some other leftist organization, doesn't mean that they're immune from the protections of the Constitution or the consequences of breaking the law. Article 6 is called the Supremacy Clause. And that, by the way, is a real simple reason why Sharia law is outright illegal in the United States. We shouldn't even be debating it. It doesn't have to be debated on a theological basis or a freedom of religion expression. It's not a First Amendment issue. It's an Article 6 issue. that the U.S. Constitution shall be the supreme law of the land, period. Supreme law of the land. Sharia defines itself as superior to all man-made forms of government, including the U.S. Constitution. So right there you have a fundamental point of conflict. And if you rule in favor of the Constitution and you're standing up for the principles of our founding fathers that our country was founded on, you're going to side with the Constitution every time, no questions asked. And you can see now why the Constitution is such a powerful document, and that it's actually stronger than any physical wall that we could build around our country if we will simply implement it and enforce the statutes and laws that are in it. And then the 14th Amendment says that no state can pass a law that abridges the privileges or immunities of the citizens of the United States, which is another simple reason or illustration of why sanctuary cities are illegal. They're unconstitutional. If a particular city passes a sanctuary law and allows illegal aliens, illegal immigrants to come into their community, it's a violation. It's abridging the privileges or the immunities of the citizens of that town or city without their permission. And it's a violation of the Constitution, a violation of the 14th Amendment. So you can see how basic and fundamental these arguments should be, and how simple it really would be to enforce them if we went by the provisions of the Constitution. And every boy and girl, mom and dad, grandpa and grandpa, grandmother would be cooperating with law enforcement at the local level, who would then be cooperating with federal. And if we see somebody come into our community, we would implement the principles that are in the Constitution without violating civil rights and civil liberties or privacy rights, and cooperate together and make sure that that person either comes here legally or is removed from the country. It's that basic. It's not that complicated. It takes will and courage, but the issue is really not that complicated. So what are some of the examples that we see today regarding altering or abolishing, or attempts to do so, of our form of government? Well, here's one. President Barack Obama on September 20th, 2016 said that he was convinced that in the long run, giving up some freedom of action, not giving up our ability to protect ourselves or pursue our core interests, but binding ourselves to international rules over the long term. Well, a lot of that I don't really know what exactly he's trying to say, but it does appear that he's saying that for the sake of being part of the global community, we might have to be willing to sacrifice some of the liberties and freedoms that our Creator endowed us with and that are defined within the Constitution. In other words, to sacrifice our own sovereignty so that we can be part of the global community. I say no, and so does President Trump. He has an intuitive understanding of sovereignty, and he doesn't compromise it for the sake of a treaty or a trade deal or some kind of an arrangement that's been put in place that was unconstitutional in the first place, like the Iran nuclear deal, for example, or compromising with known terrorist front groups like CARE and ISNA and so on the other hand. Here we have, just to reinforce the wisdom of President Trump's attempted executive order to restrict individuals coming in from, I think it was originally 7 chosen countries, and then finally when it was passed and went to the Supreme Court, 6, that the DOJ and the DHS reported that 3 out of 4 individuals connected with and convicted of international terrorism were foreign-born. So despite all the claims to the contrary by members of Congress and other local politicians, it's an actual fact that a majority of the terrorism and other criminal activity is done by people that were not born here in the United States. So it behooves us to protect our national security by vetting people coming from these countries. The reason why President Trump chose those original 7 and then 6 is because all but one, meaning Iran, didn't have a functioning government. And there's no way that law enforcement officers or immigration officers like myself would actually be sure that the passport and the paperwork that we saw was really the person that was standing in front of us. There's no way of knowing and no way of verifying. There's no way of actually vetting them because the governments are not functioning. That's the reason. He said, let's start out with these core group, see if we can improve our process, and then we'll go from there to help upgrade our national security. That was his original intent. Meanwhile, in opposition to every single one of these efforts by the president to protect our security, California, for example, is suing DOJ over funding cuts to sanctuary states. Well, I already pointed out, according to Article or the 14th Amendment, that sanctuary cities and sanctuary states are fundamentally unconstitutional. And so if the people that were bringing this lawsuit from California actually understood the Constitution, they would have never brought the lawsuit in the first place. And then the fact that judges rule in favor of these kind of cases shows you how deep our national security meltdown has actually gone. We're basically functioning on a nearly incoherent level. Meanwhile, the UN is also involved. You've heard about the Global Compact for Migration, I'm sure, where the UN is trying to impose standards of immigration regardless of the national sovereignty of countries around the world. Some of the countries in the UN are opposing it, like Poland and Romania, and we so far have also resisted signing on to this Global Compact for Migration because it undermines and violates our own sovereignty. But as I found out when I worked in Minnesota this past year in the lead up to the midterms, the now elected Attorney General for the state of Minnesota, Keith Ellison, openly defies the law and says that he will not enforce the Constitution, that he will promote sanctuary cities and open borders. He's the Attorney General of the state of Minnesota, who happens to also be a Muslim, but in this case, he's very open about it, and yet he still was elected. Here's another example. He's one of the 16 attorney generals across the country who are suing the federal government to halt President Trump's emergency order. Now, this is the most obvious and blatant disregard for the Constitution. It's like these individuals have never even read it. It's as though they have no idea whatsoever what the Constitution says about our sovereignty, our border protection, Article 1, Article 4. It's as though they don't even exist. They're just going to file lawsuits to force their political agenda on the rest of us in complete violation of our sovereignty and our Constitution. And there are opinions out there that say the State of the Union is unstable, volatile, and degenerating. Well, like Benjamin Franklin said to a woman, well, do we have a republic? He said, yes, ma'am, we do, if you can keep it. And that's still the question today. Are we going to be able to keep our republic, or are we going to allow it to morph into a majority-rule democracy? So with all the threats that we face, the question comes up, well, what must we do? And I feel a little bit like Popeye, and I sure you probably feel the same way sometimes, in that he said, you know, I stands all I can stands, and I can't stands no more. So what did he do when the situation got out of hand? Well, he opened a can of spinach. And I think that's what we need to do. I'll give you a homework assignment. Everybody watching and listening, go down to Walmart and buy a whole case of spinach, because I think it's time to open a can, don't you? So with that, I'm going to conclude this segment, our national sovereignty, in the series on the national security meltdown. And don't forget, get your can of spinach. Thank you very much.
WVW Broadcast Network is pleased to present National Security Meltdown with host Philip Haney. As the author of See Something, Say Nothing, Philip is recognized as a credible national security expert and frequent guest host on national radio and television broadcasts, as well as a much sought-after keynote speaker. Philip is a charter member of the Department of Homeland Security with previous experience in the Middle East. As a DHS frontline officer and intelligence expert, Philip bravely tried to say something about the people and organizations that threatened the United States. Yet, his intelligence information was eliminated from the government database, and he was investigated during the Obama administration by the very agency assigned to protect the country. Through this broadcast, Philip will expose just how deeply the submission, denial, and deception run within our national intelligence agencies. Philip's years of being an insider allowed him to be an eyewitness to the federal government's capitulating to an enemy within and punishing those who reject the narrative of the deep state. Such dereliction of duty has led to a national security meltdown. And now, here is your host, Philip Haney.